Jaylen Brown kicks it out. Smart fakes. Inside. Tatum spins and he puts it in. Celtics go up by one.
He left his feet. Turnover.
Here's Jaylen Brown. Oh, he ascends and lands on top of Cleveland after he smashes it.
Chased out here by Horford. Lays it down, corner shot. Whoa!
Great shot by Rob Williams. Game-saving block. It's across the board. Watch. They're trying to get Embiid, but Al Horford did a good job of pressing. He wasn't going to allow Harris to get any rhythm whatsoever. And then Rob Williams, body out of the way so he doesn't foul the shooter, gets the block. Big-time play.
Yeah.
Okay, elevates.
Yeah.
Wasn't going to run into Niang. Gets the deflection. Love it.
Boston a chance to tie and take the lead here. Boston on an 8-0 run. Horford gets by Giannis and throws it down and one. Giannis on the drive, splits the defense. Too strong on the layup. Horford the rebound.
He's missed 3 point-blank layups tonight that you just don't see him miss.
Grant Williams again! 7th three-pointer of the game. It's a 16-point lead.
And that's something that the Celtic coaching staff talked to the referees about at halftime.
Jaylen Brown with the finish. Wow!
Then he actually is. He's 6'9", 237, but he has a 7'6 wingspan.
Oh! That's a man's jam! Jason Tatum! Oh, my!
Hey everyone, I want to welcome you into All the Arguments. I'm your host, Kevin Morris. Welcome to a very special bonus episode. Now, why is it a bonus? Why is it special? First and foremost, you're going to notice the length of this episode is significantly shorter than most of my episodes. Most of my episodes are going to go around an hour. This one's very short. Secondly, you'll also notice that I'm the only one here. Now, if you're going to have a podcast called All the Arguments, it's going to be a very, very rare episode where there's only one person speaking. But like I said, this one's a little different. And finally, and most importantly, this is just not the type of episode I'm usually going to do. This podcast is about all the fun arguments we love to have with our friends. You know, what's the best movie of all time? Best album of all time? That type of deal. And sometimes we'll add in sports, but it's not a sports podcast. Now, we do love to argue sports topics here and there. And of course, if you're going to talk about having a podcast with all the fun arguments you have with your friends, these are the arguments that I have with my friends. But this episode, again, a little different. This one's just really in a response to how the national media, to how Boston sports media, how everyone's viewing this team post-finals. And frankly, I'm flabbergasted by it, how negative everyone is being. Yes, they lost the finals. Yes, it was crushing. Now, I'll tell you a little bit about me. I'm originally from Boston. I live on the West Coast. Been out here for a little while. But I am a diehard Boston sports fan. Whether it's the Pats, the Red Sox, the Bruins, or the first team I ever fell in love with as a little kid, the Boston Celtics. Yes, like many of you, I was absolutely crushed after Game 6. I was frustrated, like many of you. I took some time, was able to step back, reevaluate how I felt about this team. It seems like so many are just stuck in that Golden State series. Honestly, it seems like so many are just stuck in Game 6 or Game 5. And they're forgetting the rest of the playoffs. They're forgetting the rest of the season. Most importantly, they're forgetting the depth of this team. And I get it. It's hard when you're actually in Boston to do that. I say that because I can think of two examples of when Boston teams have lost in the playoffs and how it can be so hard to shake that funk that comes over you. Think about in 2003 when the Red Sox were playing the Yankees in the ALCS. And we got to Game 7 in Yankee Stadium. Pedro Martinez pitching. And that was the game that Grady Little didn't pull him fast enough. And sure enough, Pedro ended up giving up some hits and then some runs. Game got tied, and you know how it ended with Aaron Boone with that walk-off homer. I remember just being crushed after that. I remember for at least 2 weeks, just feeling that, ugh, that funk. I think about 2008 when the Patriots played the Giants in the Super Bowl. That was the historic 2007-2008 season for the Patriots, where both Brady and Randy Moss broke records. They had had a perfect season going into the Super Bowl. And we all know how that ended, with David Kyrie catching that ball on his helmet. And at that point, I had just moved to Las Vegas. So though I had watched every game up to that point, I remember immediately feeling right after, oh, you know, I'm kind of thankful I'm not back in Boston right now, because I know that funk you can't get away from. Everyone's feeling it. Everyone's got that kind of depressed glare on their face. So yeah, I get it. Maybe it's hard for you to shake it. So if that's you, I understand. Maybe this podcast, maybe this episode will help you out a little bit. Because honestly, I think there is so much more good than bad on this team. I think the future of this team is incredible. I think the base of this team is built. And to not acknowledge that, and to just focus on the negatives of this season, I think it's silly. Now, I'll point out one sports radio personality, and I don't mean to just point him out, or maybe I do. He's not alone by any means, but Lou Merlone. If you don't know who Lou Merlone is, he's a co-host of one of the Drive Time sports radio shows in Boston. I actually love his show with Christian Fourier and Megan Ottolini. They're incredible. But his takes have just blown my mind recently. He not only has he been so negative on this team and on the players, but he went as far as, so the draft was last night. He wanted a couple of the players like Grant Williams and Peyton Pritchard traded for basically the 28th pick, for basically a guy that won't be able to contribute. And he acknowledged that he just wanted these guys off the team because he thought they were having a negative impact on this team. And I just couldn't disagree with him more. So I was prompted to say, okay, listen, this is my platform I have. I want to speak out. I want to give a different view, and honestly, what I think is the real view of this team, and put it out there. Now, if I'm going to start with what this team has, I got to start with the players. And if I'm going to start with the players, you know which player I got to start with. And that's Jason Tatum. And yeah, I know, he didn't have a good finals. I'm sure he'd even tell you that. And I'm not going to make excuses for him. He needed to play better. He needed to hold on to the ball better. No doubt. But the first thing you got to acknowledge when you talk about Jason Tatum is he's 24 years old. 24. And he was just voted All-NBA first team at 24. I also want to point out something that not a lot of people are mentioning around him. When you think how these last few seasons went, when you start with the 2021 season, you know, one ended late, one started earlier, all due to the COVID and the bubble situation, they didn't have a lot of time off. Well, when the 21 season ended, Jason Tatum pretty much went right and joined up with Team USA. He had a very short break this summer. Now, you add in not only the wear and tear of the season, but you add in the fact that how he had to play and the teams they had to play in those series. I mean, that Bucks series was intense. It was physical. The Heat series was intense, and that was physical. Could there be a reality that this man was just exhausted? Because the way he played in the finals, he didn't play that way earlier in the playoffs. Honestly, I think he was just worn down. But that's not to say he doesn't have room to grow. But why would you think he's not going to grow? You got to realize, first off, he's a 6'9 forward who can do everything offensively. He can drive the paint. He can pass the ball now. He can shoot the three. He's a great rebounder. He's an incredible defender. If you think there are a bunch of 6'9 guys in the league who can do what he does, you're out of your mind. He's rare. An NBA first teamer. That means they think he's one of the five best players in the league. And you need that. You need that guy if you're going to win a championship. You've got him. And he's young. He brought this team within two wins of being the world champs. What's amazing is he's grown this season. He's a different player than he was last season. He's added being not a good passer, but a great passer to his repertoire. Now, if you're going 1A, you got to go 1B, right? And 1B is JB. talking about Jaylen Brown, another young guy, 25 years old, who outside of ball handling has such a diverse skill set. Again, he's a great defender. Again, he can shoot from beyond the arc and drive the lane. He's becoming a better passer. This is a guy, when he came into the league, he really couldn't do much. He was athletic. That's what he was known for. But he didn't have the skills that he's developed. And he's still developing. There was talk he could have been the finals MVP the way he was playing. He stepped up his game this season. I don't know why you would think he's not going to continue to grow. And then that brings us to the lightning rod. And I mean that in every sense of the words, for Boston fans, Marcus Smart. So many people get frustrated by him. And honestly, if you are one of those types, I'm going to tell you, you are spoiled. All I heard about from disgruntled basketball fans for years was, oh, players today only care about offense. They're not invested in the little things like the players in the 80s and the 90s. And so many of those same fans are the ones who don't appreciate the player that Marcus is. Marcus is the defensive player of the year. Marcus is the guy who's usually first to the floor when there's a loose ball. Marcus is the heart and soul of this team. This is the guy who took your team further than Isaiah, Kyrie, or Kemba ever could at the point guard position. This was the first year he was given the role of starting point guard, and look at what he did. But of course, when you talk about Marcus Smart, you talk about his defense, which is incredible. Incredible. I challenge anyone, go back and watch the Heat series, especially the first few games before he got hurt. And he got hurt. There's no doubt in my mind. But watch those first few games. Watch how every time a player had the ball and Marcus was on him, watch how quickly they passed away from him. They didn't want whoever Marcus was guarding to have the ball. It didn't matter if it was Jimmy Butler or whoever. If Marcus Smart was on that person, they were passing the ball away. They wanted nothing to do with Marcus Smart. And he still had something like 4 steals in that game. Now, I remember watching that and being blown away. I'm like, man, they don't even want the ball near him. And he's still making an impact defensively. He's something special, something very rare. And he was absolutely deserving of being Defensive Player of the Year. Quite honestly, he's my favorite player on this team. Has been for a while. Again, Marcus Smart's growing. And then that will bring me to a guy who I don't think he has much more room to grow. In fact, I expect kind of a regression from him. We're talking about, of course, Big Al Horford. Now, I don't know what the future holds for him with this team. I love what he gave. I love his presence. I hope he can continue to do it and be part of it. But he's now 36. He's the old man on this team. I do think we have to lower some expectations for what he'll be able to give you in the future. But I do believe whatever he's able to give you will be a plus. I can imagine him coming off the bench and just being a force. But that brings me to Rob Williams. Now, we all know the question mark when it comes to Rob Williams. It's his health. Can he stay healthy? And that's it. Because if he can, he's a force. He's the type of force that will have 4 blocks in 18 minutes type of force. He's the type of guy who can totally impact a game without needing the ball. Again, something a little rare. People can forget what a luxury it is to have a guy like him on the team. We've gotten a taste of what Time Lord can be, and we want more. Obviously, again, it's all about the health for him. But just like most of the guys on this team, he's 24, he's young, and he's still growing, and I do have hope. As far as the bench goes, you now have a bunch of young guys who now have significant playoff experience. I know Derek White, Grant Williams, and Peyton Pritchard disappeared in the last couple of games. But again, if you think every team has a bunch of young guys with their type of potential on them, you're nuts. Those guys contributed to being the best defense I've seen in the NBA in I don't know how long. Think about Derek White. Think about not just the plays he was able to make offensively, but when Marcus got hurt, when his ankle got jacked up, Derek White came in and filled in brilliantly. His defense was Marcus Smart-like. And Marcus Smart defense is rare, as I already said. But you got a guy who's committed to it. You got Grant Williams. Man, so many people are down. Again, Lou Maloney wants him traded just to get him off the team. Listen, Grant Williams is 23, I think. He might be 24. I think 23 or 24. Forget the fact that he shot 40% from the three this season. Forget the fact this is his first year really being one of those rotation guys. Forget that. His defense was incredible. Stan Van Gundy said he's never seen a player defend Giannis better than Grant Williams. I get news for you. Giannis is still in the East. You're going to have to deal with him for some time. And then you got Peyton Pritchard. Listen, this was his second year, and he had some big moments in the playoffs. He had some big moments in the second half of the season. I don't know what he's going to be, but I'd love to give him another year or two and see what he could be. If he turns out to be your backup point guard, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. But we'll see. Again, now it's not that I don't want to acknowledge the faults that were exposed in the finals, but I feel it's gone so far the other way that nobody is recognizing what we actually have in this team. See, our hopes are raised high, as they should have been, and the finals was crushing, and I get it. But you know what would have been worse than losing the way we did in the finals? How about losing the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals? Nope, that didn't happen, though. We beat the number one seed on their home court. And yeah, they were beat up. But what do you think the Celtics were? What do you think Rob Williams and Marcus Smart were? What do you think Jason Tatum and Jalen Murray and all the guys on this team were, and Al Horford at 36? You think they weren't feeling after that Bucks series beatdown? But they handled business. You know what would have been worse than that? How about losing to the Bucks? I mean, they were the defending champs. They do have, in my opinion, the most dominant NBA player on their team. And yeah, I know they were missing Middleton, but they still had Giannis. Oh, and by the way, the refs let Giannis get away with murder in that series. They still beat them and moved on. You know what would have been worse than losing to them? How about losing to the Nets? Now think back. When the seeding was going on the last few games of the regular season, so many teams, including the Bucks, did everything they could to avoid a first-round matchup with the Nets. You know who didn't? Your Celtics. No, they took on the Nets. They didn't beat them. They swept them. And that's a team that has not only KD, but Kyrie, and a host of other great players. They entered the season as favorites to win the championship. And your team swept. And then, of course, it would have been even more devastating to miss the playoffs, which halfway through the season, it looked like they actually might. But as of the new year, your team was not a good team. It was the best team in the entire league, period, offensively and defensively. And that brings me to one of my biggest reasons to hold out hope, which is Ime Udoka. And I am totally overhearing how he got outcoached by Steve Kerr. So what? Yeah, he did. Steve Kerr is one of the best coaches in the league, if not the best coach in the league. Steve Kerr's been here many times. This was Ime's first year as a head coach. This was his first year with the Celtics. And what did he do? He came into a team that had talent, that had potential, but couldn't put things together. And he didn't just ride this team in what it was on track to being, which I think it was always on track to be good. No. He came in and he molded this team into being the defensive unit that they are. He got them to play his way. Of course, it took half a year to do it. Of course, it took maybe a trade or two to make it happen. But he got it done. Quite honestly, I've made the argument that he should have been the NBA coach of the year. No disrespect to Monty Williams, but I do believe the absolute best coaching job this season was Ime. Now, I know what you're thinking. That sounds like a homer take. Allow me. Let me point out a couple things, and you tell me if Monty Williams or any other coach in the NBA did as much as Ime. Because I'm going to name four areas where I think Ime's fingerprints are all over this team and its success. Number one, he got this team to gel offensively. Remember all that talk about could the two Jays coexist? Could they play together? Could they make this team theirs? Well, you haven't heard much of that talk recently, have you? No, because we saw he could get them to play together at an incredibly high level. Number two, he helped Marcus Smart refine his role as a starting point guard. This team searched for so many years to find the guy who could be the point guard on this team. They had him all along. He helped Marcus learn to be a distributor first and foremost. And like I already said, Marcus now takes far less of the bad shots that he had been taking. He makes more shots than he was. And like I said, his passing is now incredible. And that doesn't even begin to get into, again, who Marcus Smart is. Number three, he developed both the Williams. Rob finally made it into the starting lineup. And as stated before, he's a force. Grant developed from being a guy who didn't play 1 minute of any significance in earlier playoff series to this year being the first man off the bench, being the guy that was tasked with shutting down the most dominant player in the league, and he did it. I got to give Ime a lot of credit on that. And most importantly in his favor is, of course, the defense he infused here. This defense is just nasty. Stephen A. Smith constantly referred to them as piranhas because that's how they attack. They are just vicious, guarding all positions. How they can switch 1 through 5. How committed they are. Now, those are 4 things I look at and I say, Ime did that. Did Monty do that in Phoenix, or was it more Chris Paul and Devin Booker? Did Steve Kerr do that in Golden State, or was it more the fact he had the greatest shooter in the league on his team? Maybe, but I don't think so. I think a lot of these improvements fall squarely on Ime Udoka. And then finally, in my praise, let me hold up that I now have faith in one Brad Stevens as the GM. It was hard for me personally to hear that Danny Ainge was leaving the Celtics. I mean, most of the players I've held up here are here because of Danny. I say here, I should say there, because I'm not there. I'm here. But you know what? I do think it was time for Danny to move on. You know, he got a rep for always trying to win every trade. I think there were a lot of teams that didn't want to deal with him anymore. I think sometimes he had a hard time identifying the guys on this team's value. I think he loved draft picks. I don't think he would have made the deals for Daniel Tice or Derek White. A little side note, I didn't mention him either earlier. I know Daniel Tice did not get off the bench really in the finals, but as a 9th or 10th man on a team, you can do a lot worse than Daniel Tice. Everyone seems to forget how valuable he was in the Nets series. But getting back to Brad Stevens, he made the moves he needed to make. It took some balls to trade Kemba away and bring Al Horford back. So, you know what? My hat's off to him. I'm excited to see what Brad does in the future. So that I just don't get labeled a green teamer or pink hat or whatever term you want to put for a casual Boston sports fan, which I'm not. There are needs. Do you think this team needs a shooter off the bench? I'd love to see another good big man come to this team. But as far as needs go, you don't have that many. The key pieces are in place. You got your star player. You got your secondary star player. You've got a system that works. You've got an incredible amount of role players who can play both ends of the court on this team. But they're young, and that's a double-edged sword. The bad to it is sometimes they get shook in places they've never been. I think Grant Williams, Derek White, Peyton Pritchard, we're all shook in the finals. They've never been there. They're young. The good thing to it, though, is because they're young, they got room to grow. Think about how much Grant Williams grew from last season to this season. It was a leap. What if he makes a leap from this season to next season? What if Jason Tatum does? What if Jaylen Brown does? What if a bunch of the guys on this team make a leap? That's what you already have here. Now think about this. The Celtics have an offseason to improve. They got trade exceptions to work with. They've definitely got trade value. And most importantly, I trust the people in charge of making that decision. I think there's a lot to be hopeful for. I'll also throw this out. You want a hot take from this? If you want to argue me on something, here's a hot take on one of the players who I haven't mentioned, who I think has a ton of room to grow, and I actually think has a really bright future. I'm talking about Aaron Nesmith. Aaron Nesmith was drafted last season as a first rounder, was drafted as a shooter, and as of yet, he hasn't shown that. What did he show you? He showed you he can defend. He can show you that he plays with intensity. He shows you that he's athletic and that his game has some range. He just hasn't lived up to the shooter we thought he could be. Again, this was his second season. Do you remember what Jaylen Brown was his first season? He was riding the bench. All he had was his athleticism, and now he's a star player, or on the verge of being a star player in this league. Now, I'm not saying I think Aaron Nesmith is going to be that necessarily, but this team doesn't need him to be that. If he can develop into being a great shooter and bring what he's already bringing in his defensive tenacity, then not only does he fit into this team perfectly, He makes this team deadly. I don't think it's a hot take to say this team has a lot of good going for it. I think the future is bright. I think as Celtics fans, we should be thankful to this team. And I think we should be hopeful for what this team is going to be. Guys, if you like what you hear, please like, subscribe, share, do all those things. You know, all the podcasts as you do, help your boy out. But I hope you have enjoyed this little bonus episode. Please tune in for my full-length episodes. Look forward to talking with you.